Welcome to the Public Handicapper Podcast. This week, we will handicap Saturday Stakes from Gulfstream and Fairgrounds. This is show number 48, January 17th, 2020. I'm Scott Carson, founder of Public Handicapper, and I'm joined by my co-host, Hall of Fame handicapper, Chris Larmy. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Scott. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Nice weather here. It's cold. But I actually like that because it was 65 last weekend, and that was just weird.
Well, we have a winter wonderland going right now. So it's a little bit of snow. It's not brutally cold or anything, and it wasn't a big blizzard. So it just feels like winter.
Yeah, and for anybody new listening, I'm in New York State, and Chris is in Washington State. And we have a guest. We have a special guest. He's in the state of California. He's qualified for the NHC 17 consecutive times. He's finished sixth in 2005, leading after day one. He's won tournaments at Del Mar, Keeneland, and Santa Anita. He's Bill Sherman. Welcome, Bill.
Good morning.
All right.
Good morning here.
It's early in California and also early in Washington State. You guys are at least on the same time zone.
Yes.
Chris, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Okay, just making sure. All right, well, before we get started with the races, Bill, as a standard procedure on the pod, can you tell us a little bit about what tools you use in your handicapping?
Oh my gosh. Okay. I use a lot of them. And there are certain tools that I like for certain situations, certain kinds of races. But amongst the tools that I use, I would say a primary tool would be Thoroughgraphs and HTR. But at various times and for various situations, I would look at DRF past performances. I will look at GrizNet. For certain races, I will take a glance at workout reports. Generally, unless it's a big tournament, I'm not buying all that stuff. But for example, in the NHC, I will be armed with printouts and on my computer for probably all, what did I list, five of them?
Yeah.
So yeah, lots of different tools.
So with all those tools, what would you say, if you have one, what is the most important angle that you have? Is it pace? Are you a turf person? Do you study bias?
I would say all of the above. I will use HDR to give me kind of an overall picture of the race. What the pace is going to be, who's likely going to be where early. And from that, try and figure out, who may get the trip or maybe in the best position to take advantage of that particular race's characteristics. And then I will generally look at Thoroughgraphs to get a general idea of the form a horse is in and also, whether the horse is basically fast enough to win. I think the figures that Thoroughgraph provides are probably the best in terms of an overall number because they take into account the trip that a horse gets. And I would say, primary angle that I would look for is a horse doing something different and doing it well. What changed and you know, all of a sudden if a horse does something it hasn't done before, I will take note of that. Both good and bad. If a horse changes trainers and all of a sudden the next number is well off and I can't come up with another reason for why that number was off or that race was off, I will generally, you know, hit that horse with a demerit in terms of evaluating it for that race. And likewise, if there's a change, if blinkers go on, if the trainer changes, if the surface changes, and all of a sudden the horse runs better numbers than it had been running, I'll take note of that. I'll actually search out those situations.
Okay.
So, a lot of different things, a lot of different situations. I'll look at the workout reports for either first-time starters or somebody that's been off a layoff for a long time. I'll kind of ignore the workout reports generally for turf races because I don't think it's that worthwhile what a horse does when it's training on the dirt for a turf specialist. So,
fair enough. Chris, do you have any questions for Bill?
No, other than do you approach the contest differently than you would just a normal race or handicapping to bet on?
I would say yes, because, it's very hard in a contest with a lot of people to bet low-priced horses and put together enough of them to get to a winning score. Although if the contest has a limited number of races, you're more likely to accept the low price. But if it's a lot of races and a lot of people, you're looking for prices. And my philosophy is in most races, most horses, if they get the right trip, the right situation, they're capable of winning. So I'm looking for value. I'd rather bet the 8-1 that I think should be 5-1 than the 12-1 that I think should be 20-1. But on the other hand, I'm going to look to beat the 2-1. I would say it really is situationally dependent.
Okay, well, we have limited time because we had some technical difficulties. So we'll end it there and get into our first race, which is the 10th race at Gulfstream Park. This is for Saturday, January 18th. It's the Sunshine Millions Turf, 1/16 on the turf with a purse of $150,000 for 4-year-olds and up. And Bill, as our guest of honor, we'd like to hear what you think first.
Okay. In this race, I liked a couple of horses. It's a pretty big field. I want to try and find some value. I thought that the most likely winner would be between the 2 and the 9 horse. So,
would you go by names?
Throwing honor. Yeah, I didn't write it down, but I can give them to you quickly. I think Curlin's Honor and March to the Arch. I felt that the 9 has certainly been facing the best of the horses in here, but the 2 is certainly running numbers that I think can win this race, and I favor at this trip. If something is close, I would generally favor the inside horse because I think the horse is most likely to get the better trip. I like the connections. So if I had to, pick the horse I think is most likely to win, I would take the 2. I do like a horse at a bit of a price here, the 5 horse. The winner of the last race, and I'm sorry, the 5 is, I think it's Jay's Solitude. Mm-hmm. The winner of the last race came back to win a grade 1, the Hollywood Derby, and then a grade 2. The horse is a 4-year-old, which I like. because I think there's still room for improvement. It's a deep closer in a race where I expect there's going to be an honest pace, and the horse has run two sub 11 second final furlongs in its last three races. So it certainly has the ability to close if the pace is fast enough. And I think in this race, it may. So those would be my picks. Two okay. and the nine, prefer the two slightly, and then a price would be the five.
Great. Chris, do you have a selection in this race?
I probably concur with most of what Bill said, that the two and the nine, Curlin's Honor and March to the Arch, are sort of the class of the field, if you want to use that term. They've been running better numbers against better horses, and I kind of would favor the two as well, just from a trip perspective. After that, it gets pretty muddled. They're all very similar. I kind of like Jay Solitude for the same reason, sort of the best closer in the race if things set up for it. But the other horse, if the morning line holds up, that I think you have to consider is the three horse Scraps, just because Safi Joseph, the trainer, has been just lights out on every surface, every distance. Even in stakes races, he's won three of his last four. So I think, you know, it's first off the claim for Safi Joseph. That's just, you're foolish if you leave that horse out. That's probably the price horse. It's not a secret though, so I'd be surprised if actually get the 10-1 odds on that horse.
For pod pick purposes, meaning when we're watching the races, and we sometimes I like to tweet if our pod hits, which horse is your pod pick in this race, Chris? You're most likely winner.
My pod pick, yeah. The most likely winner is Curlin's Honor.
Okay.
But
include Scraps, you're saying?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that in this race, you do have to really go deep. I think that Curlin's Honor can do it. If he's 9-2, that's a good price on the horse for the fastest horse in the race. However, and this is coming from somebody who had him in his last race on the pod at 7-1, the one issue that Curlin's Honor may have to deal with is that he may be extending his distance a little bit too far for him. His slowest race on the turf last year was at 1 mile and 16th, even though it was a winning effort. And he started his career doing a lot of sprints. So I think he may be more of a miler type, and that could leave him slightly vulnerable carrying 122. And he may also be bet off that 9-2 morning line. I would go deep. I would include many of these horses, almost all of them, in any pick ends. But the horse that I'm most interested in as a price play is the one, Max KO. He has a pattern going into his last race that was very positive. But the positive pattern was that he was circling back to his top. But in his last race, he gunned it on the lead and he spit the bit and he finished last. So I figured there had to be some excuse in the race. So I watched the replay. And in fact, he bumped right after the start. He bumped pretty soundly into the horse to his inside. Now, if you look at the time form pace figures, the early pace figures for this horse, they were the fastest. Even though it doesn't seem like that pace was that hot based on looking at fractions, the time form pace numbers are the fastest that horse had ever run. So besides the bump, he was on the lead running a faster pace than he's ever run. And, you know, he ran out of gas. So that's going to inflate his price. And he could easily be 30-1 because he was 14-1 in his last race and he finished last. And he's slower than these horses. I mean, there's no doubt that he's slower than these horses. But there's a couple other things to like about him. One is that he ran the fastest workout ever since his last race. He carries 118. He's going to have the lead. He starts from the rail. And I don't think that there's a lot of speed in this race. There's a couple other horses that have some speed, but if you look at their time form pace figures, they're blue. And like, they like to run near the lead, but they're not the kind of horse that has, you know, will do whatever it takes to get the lead. So I think he could catch them napping, and he'd be the price play, certainly, and include. And if you're in a contest, he's got a shot. And I just re-looked at my analysis of double-digit winners from the NHC last year, horses that won at double digits. There were 25 of them over the course of 3 days, and 9 of those 25 were young four-year-olds. And that doesn't mean that just because they were young four-year-olds, they won. But I just found it notable that the characteristics that a lot of the horses had, 9 of them were fresh four-year-olds. Now, I don't know if that's statistically significant, Bill, but since you're into statistics, what do you think? That's over 33%. So
I definitely think that that's significant. I'm sorry, what did you say the sample size was on that?
Well, I mean, we're looking at 3 days of NHC races, right? So we're looking at, what, like 17 or 18 cards, 19, 20 cards, and 9 of the 25 double digit.
I probably wouldn't.
Fresh 4 year olds.
Yeah, I think that's significant. I did take a look at this horse, and I did think there's a chance, certainly from the inside post, it breaks well, that it could get a loose lead. I expect that the four is going to go out with it or try to go out with it. And if either of those two horses, you know, one of them sits back, I like the other. The six has a little bit of speed, but I do expect it's going to be between the one and the four. And I thought the four is the other cash. Was intriguing, but you know, the one certainly, and I think both of you have said that pretty much after the, you know, the horses we felt were most likely to win, probably the Curlin's Honor and I guess, and the 9 horse was, but anybody on his best day could pop up and win this, and I would certainly be looking at the odds you know, before the race to see if somebody drifts up to a very appetizing price. I didn't think the one, Scott, was fast enough or had shown enough yet, but certainly as a young four-year-old, could improve off its best numbers.
Yeah, one other angle I want to throw in there. I use these racingflow.com figures, and the horse won't get an upgrade because the flow, based on their algorithm, wasn't closer favoring. So he didn't run against the grain according to their flow figures, but he did run against the grain according to their bias figures. So there was clearly a closer bias on the turf that day, December 7th. And if you look at the charts, all of the horses that won on the turf won from off the pace. The closest was Sheki Shabazz in a sprint, and even he was third at some point in the race. So, you know, so he's really going against a bias, if not the flow. He was certainly going against the bias. And this is a horse that wants the lead. There's no reason why he can't get the lead. And the only question is whether they're going to press him too hard. So I think it's an opportunity. But, you know, he's going to be 30-1, and I wouldn't blame anybody for scoffing.
This is a no scoffing zone on Long Shots, the podcast. So,
then we'll move to the 11th race at Gulfstream, and that's the Sunshine Millions Classic. It's a mile and an eighth on the dirt. Purse of $200,000 for four-year-olds and up. Chris, we'll let you get started on this one.
Well, on this race, I like the one-horse Noble Drama. If people have followed the podcast over the about a year now we've been going, they know these are the kinds of horses I'm almost always on. Horses with some back figures that can win the race, that come off the bench to run a pretty good race, and now they're going second off a layoff. There's just a lot to like about this horse. Drawing the rail at a mile and an eighth, I think, is a big advantage at Gulfstream. There's not a big run to the turn. This horse comes from out of it, but this looks like a race that's loaded with early speed. So I think he could, you know, get the setup that he needs to win. So, you know, that horse is probably the one I'm most on. The other horse I just wanted to note in here, probably the other horse I like, but it's not as big a price, is the two horse Tap the Mojo, who is what I call a polypop horse. And by that, I mean, it's a horse who has been running on synthetic. It's most of its career, all of its career, has sort of breeding that says that it could run on dirt if it ever gets on dirt. And then it finally got on dirt for the first time last time and really ran a big race. Back when they first started synthetic, it was poly track. So I kind of refer to all synthetic tracks as poly. And so when they go synth to dirt with some dirt breeding, I usually like to play them with a chance to make a big forward move. And he's a great example of that in his last start. Now he's been exposed, so you won't get the big price, but, to what Bill said early on when you're asking him about angles, and he said, when they do something different and they do better or worse, you take note. And this horse definitely improved in its first dirt start, so I wouldn't be surprised to see it run well again here, second time dirt. But that's kind of my main opinion on this race.
All right, Bill, we'll swing it back to you. What did you think?
Well, I also like the one, but that's my, and the one being Noble Drama, but that's my second choice. I'm going to try and beat the favorite in here, Red Crescent. You know, one thing that I always like notice, and I ask myself, why is this? And that is, if a horse has run a lot of times, and this horse has run 42 times and has never run this distance, and you know, I do think trainers know something. So to me, that's a little bit of a warning sign that it's being asked to run a mile and a half for the first time. It's never done it before. And if the trainer thought, you know, it probably was comfortable at that distance, it would have tried it before. So I'm going to try and beat that horse. Also the sixth post, while there's a long run up to the turn, you know, there's a chance he could get a little wide into the first turn. The horse I like is the three horse, which is Squeeze-a-Dios. And I like this for, I think, the angle that Chris liked the two horse, and that is the horse was gelded back in November, and then ran has run two races, and they were two best numbers, and really popped in the last race on the thoroughs. And it was a 4-year-old, so you know, there still could be more improvement. So that's the horse I would play just on that angle alone. And that horse is you know, is a nice 6-1 on the morning line. And I also like Noble Drama for a lot of the reasons that Chris stated. Last two numbers are good enough to win this. Had some good back numbers, which is something I like to see. If a horse has done it before and is circling back to those kind of numbers, you know the horse has the ability to run the winning number. And if the pattern is such that he may run it again, then that's something I take note of. And I see that in Noble Drama. So those would be my two horses, but my first choice would be the three horse, Squeeze-a-Dios.
And I'll say about Squeeze-a-Dios, I don't know which way to pronounce it, but his father was Adios.
Squeeze-a-Dios is obvious. Yes.
Squeeze-a-Dios. Yeah, I have it marked down here clearly. He got gelded. He ran his fastest workout ever. And then he romped at Gulfstream, and then he ran huge last week at 31-1 going two turns, which it wasn't his first time going two turns, but it's notable that he did do it at two turns. His dam sire is Lemon Drop Kid, so he absolutely has a shot. I don't know if I'm going to want to bet this race, but the horse that I leaned to and will be my pod pick is the 7, Super Dude. He's run two times in the past year. He's run faster based on the figures, the Thoroughgraph figures, than these horses have ever run. And he's coming off an 0-2-X pattern where he ran his top. Then the next race, he ran 2 points slower, or let's say 4 lengths approximately slower. And then his last race, he X'd. He ran a complete clunker. He was 9-2. It was an allowance optional claimer at Aqueduct on a good track. He was running for a trainer that hits at 4.8%, or was hitting at 4.8%. He's an unknown trainer. Whoever owns the horse just switched trainers to Mike Maker. And it's purely a pattern play and also a price play. I'm assuming he's going to be higher than the 6-1 off that bad race. And he would be my play because I think you do want to have some speed in the race, especially when there's only 7 horses, but you don't want to be part of the pace. And I think he'll be just off the pace, and he's only in the 7 hole. So he's my pick. My second choice was Noble Drama, but the thing I don't like about his pattern is that he ran a really big race off that 6-month layoff. It was nearly his top. It's only been 3 weeks since that race. And now he's going two turns. And the last time he ran even close to this number as a 3-year-old, he went like 6 weeks after that race, and he still couldn't match it. So I think he reacts. And this is the kind of horse that I want. I think he could win for the reasons that Chris mentioned and that you mentioned, Bill. But to me, this is sort of the classic, let him have an off race and then send it in on his next race, because the race that he ran off the layoff was nearly his best, but they're coming back a little too soon going two turns. I want to see this horse at a mile 4 to 5 weeks from now. And whoever wants to riff on that.
I think I pretty much concur with all that you all have said. I think we've had this discussion many times, Scott, and we always have a little bit of difference of opinion. But a year ago, he ran this fast, basically. And he's a better horse now. He's more developed, and I think he has a much faster number than he ran back as a 3-year-old in him. So that last number wasn't his top. I think he's capable of running faster now. So I'm not nearly as concerned. This pattern I've cashed on so many times that sometimes they don't run, and then I'll play him back. But I really feel like he's going to run well tomorrow.
Yeah, I totally respect your angle, and many times I pass on a horse like this, and then it just runs even better, like you say. And so it's really price dependent. If this horse for some reason would be only 4 or 5 to 1, then it would be like, hey, he's gonna react. But if he's like 10 to 1, then you want to say like, hey, he's a faster horse now. So, price is the final arbiter, and I do have him as my second pick. He's my second pick. So, you know, I just like I would love it if it was 6 weeks since his last race as opposed to 3 weeks.
Now, just along the same lines, that's the reason that I actually downgraded Squeeze Adios, is because it's run those two big races. So I think we now know how fast it is. I don't know if it can run any faster. It's dramatically improved over its last two, and now they wheel back really fast. I mean, like a week later. So to me, that's the horse that's most likely to react in the race. It's Squeeze Adios, not Noble Drama, who I think that last race really wasn't the fastest it can run. It has a better race in it right now. So that's I have a little bit different read on those two horses. But it's all, it's even not absolute. Well, go ahead, Bill.
No, I was going to say, and even though Squeeze Adios is my choice, the race before, which was much improved, was only a couple of weeks before that. So there is a possibility that the horse, this third race in a very short period of time could bounce, but it also could be an indication that they're just so pleased with how the horse is doing, they want to get him back as quickly as possible. I think Noble Drama, I kind of agree with Chris more on this than Scott, but my main concern with Noble Drama is, possibly having to work out the trip, because I expect that horse is going to be coming from well off the pace, and the race could get away from him. But
yeah,
he's certainly capable
right.
The pace is fast.
Yeah, he needs a setup, and you're right. It's a percentage thing. It's not. That's the thing that I think I approach differently than a lot of people, is it's not a black and white. This horse is going to run well. It's going to run poorly. There's a percent chance it will run well, and there's always a percent chance that it will run poorly. And that's why you always have to pay attention to the odds and not get too fixated on any particular horse, because, there's a lot of variables, not only whether or not they run well, but like you said, Bill, in this race, how does the race set up? Noble Drama needs a pace to run at. Will he get it? So there's lots of variables, and you just want to approach it sort of probabilistically and always be looking for the value.
Before we say Squeeze Adios to this race, I will add one stat. The trainer, Terry Pompey, there's a stat here when for her having run horses back in under 11 days. And she is she's done it 58 times lifetime, and she's hit at 5% with a 0.73 ROI. And that doesn't mean that you can't play the horse, but it's, if the horse is not a great price, that is sort of, it influences my opinion a little bit. She's not one of these trainers that specialize in this and wheeling back a week later. All right, so we'll go to the next race is the Fairgrounds 12th race. And if we have time, we'll circle back to some of the earlier races, but we're going to stick with the dirt races because they may be off the turf. And the 12th is the Silver Bullet Day at a mile and 70 yards on the dirt with a purse of $150,000 for 3-year-old fillies. Bill, why don't you get us started on this?
Okay. My feeling is the 6 horse Finite could and should win, but I'm going to try and beat it. This horse is ready, and it hasn't been on really much of a break. It looks like its standard pattern, the amount of rest. I think the horse will likely win, but at the 6-5 morning line, I'm going to try and beat this horse. I had as likely winner or as a horse that I would play, the 7 horse Portrait. And this is kind of more of a kind of a hunch to me than anything, because in its last race, where it stretched out for the first time, it bounced. But I think the horse had a little bit of an excuse. And I just have a feeling that this horse has a lot more in it. It broke its maiden easily, and they immediately stepped it up big time into a major stakes race. And I'm willing to give the horse an excuse on that one. And I just have a feeling that horse is going to run a big number. But there really are several in here that are playable as well at a price. When you have these kind of races, these horses can step up, overnight. And it's just that the others have a lot more stepping to do, but it's certainly possible. I thought that Tempo's Rising, the Speed Duel developed, would be a possibility. I wouldn't play it at 10 to 1. I want more than that. Past the Plate had three strong races and two wins. Trying Dirt, who knows how it's going to take to the surface. The three horses are deep closer. I just, excuse me, my dog is seeing something out on the hill.
The grassy knoll.
Sorry about that. Grassy knoll. But I will, I'll go on mute, but I'm going to play the seven horse in this one. And, it's not a race that I love just because I don't know who's going to step up on a given day, but I would be looking at what the prices are and adjust accordingly.
All right, Chris, where did you land here?
Well, I agree with Bill that this is the sort of race where you're not trying to play the horse that has the buzz coming into the race. You want to play the horse that will have the buzz coming out. So I'm always looking for upside. And between the two favorites, Finite, the six horse, and Portrait, the seven, I agree with him. I'd prefer the seven. I think seven has a lot more upside. Has been freshened up for this and good trainer and all that. But in a race like this, I'm afraid that horse will get bet down below its morning line and probably won't be a lot of value there. So I'm going to look past that. And Bill mentioned several horses. The one of the three that he mentioned that I like the most is the three horse Ursula, who had major excuse in its debut at Keeneland and then ran really big at second start. And then last time out, it didn't run great, but it was on a sloppy track. And there was a horse that just freaked in the slop that day. And it chased that horse around and it was soundly beaten, but finished well ahead of the third place horse. I wouldn't put a lot into that race. And this horse is really bred well and bred to go around two turns by Tappet, who, as most of has sired several Belmont winners in recent years. And the mare produced a horse in Europe named Harnell, who won over 3.5 million. So this horse is well bred. It's bred to go long. It's already showed talent sprinting, and now it gets its chance to go two turns. And it's 12 to 1 in the morning line. And if you get anything like that, to me, that's really good value in here. So that's probably the horse I'm going with. Bill did mention what I think could be a real bomb, and that's Tempers Rising, who's 10 to 1 in the morning line, but I would expect the price to be much higher. And that horse just has had all kinds of trouble. It's mostly caused by the horse, but it always finishes. And if it ever figures things out and doesn't get in its own way, it could run a big race. So, and it might get a setup here going two turns with a lot of horses in here who are stretching out for the first time with some early speed. So, that's the one I think could maybe clunk up and hit the board at a price. But the one I'm primarily interested in is the three horse Ursula, who I think is capable of really running well around two turns and has already showed it's fast enough to win. And it's a double digit odds in the morning line.
Yeah. And I'm going to concur on Ursula. The one thing I'm going to say is that her figure two races ago, at least on the Thoroughgraph figs, is faster than Finite has ever run, but it was at one turn. So there's that question mark. Maybe we get 8 to 1 on her. Not definitely not 12 to 1, I wouldn't think, but we'll just end it there because I don't have anything else to add. I do like Ursula. And we'll move to the 13th race, which is the LeCompte Stakes, a mile and a 16th on dirt, the purse of $200,000 for three-year-olds. And Chris, we'll let you start this one.
Well, these are tough races. Obviously, you've got lots of well-manned horses, 14 of them, all going around two turns with a fairly short run to the first turn. One thing to note in here is on this race at the fairgrounds, I'm almost certain they run to a different finish line, one that's closer up, so you don't get that full long fairground stretch, which is a very long stretch run. In fact, I think it might be the longest stretch run in North America. I might be wrong about that, but it's definitely one of the longest. But they actually use a first finish line that's shorter. So I think that helps the speed horses a little bit at this distance. And, you know, this one, I don't have strong opinions, but if I was having to pick a horse as the most likely winner, I would probably lean towards the 13 horse Sycamore Run, who ran really well in its first start. That was a sprint and clearly a prep for longer because it's bred to go longer. It's by Street Sense out of a Stormy Atlantic mare. And so, you know, a horse that in its debut in the slop ran big sprinting, that's really bred to go longer. It's kind of hard for me, you know, not to like a horse like that, because you would think it should be able to improve going two turns. Although, you know, it's lightly raced, its first time going two turns, and it got parked out in an outside post. I'm not as worried about the post, though, because the horse has lots of speed. So I think it can easily get position as long as it breaks well. So that's probably the one horse I like the most. The other horse, since it's such a big field, that I want to mention is the one horse Finnick the Fierce, who drew the rail, which I think could be a big advantage in a big field like this. And he's been working really well since his last race, which was his first around two turns. He didn't win, but he ran a good second. And so, you know, he can get the distance. He has a favorable post, should get a good trip. And he's one that may get overlooked. He's 15-1 in the morning line in this big field. Horses that get overlooked, you might get some crazy prices in a 14 horse field. Usually there's at least one or two horses that have a shot that just get ignored in the windows and could be 20-30-1 or higher. And this might be one of those. So, you know, Finnick the Fierce, I'll be watching the odds board, you know, and I could talk about a lot of these horses. There's so many of them that have a chance in here, but I will end it with that. Sycamore Run and Finnick the Fierce, the 13 and the 1 are the two horses I'm the most interested in this race.
And I will add that Finnick the Fierce has run since his last race, has run his fastest 5-furlong work ever, and has been running bullets. So looks like a very healthy horse. And he was 87-1 in his last race and got second in the Grade 2 Kentucky Jockey Club. So definitely merits consideration. Bill, where did you land?
Well, the first thing I did on this one is I looked at Biznet, the biases at the end of the past performances. And at this distance, this track, there is a pretty heavy inside bias. That said, I ended up close to the outside. And there are two horses I like. One's a price. One I like a lot, but in a 14 horse field in the 9 post Silver State, I'm not sure I would play it at 5-1. But, you know, all the horses in here, I'm pretty sure there isn't a great one in it, a great horse in here, but I'm not so sure that Silver State isn't. It's done nothing wrong in its first two races. It was favored in both races. Asmussen, Santana, I feel good about that. Looks like it runs close to the pace and maybe can work out position into the first turn. You know, 5-1 with this field where you've got horses that are lightly raced and any one of them could pop up. Not so sure, but that would be my first pick. And the price horse I like a little bit is the 10 horse Enforceable. Looks to be a deep closer. I don't love that from an outside post, but this horse has finished well, in 30 and change in the slop in a grade two at Churchill Downs. And, you know, if the pace is hot and the race starts to fall apart, I could see that horse coming late. And at 15-1, might take a shot at that.
Just a note on that, Bill, that horse is a full brother to Mohaman.
Yes.
And New Year's Day, who is the sire of Maximum Security. Well, I'm gonna be very close to Bill here, even though I think that Finnick the Fierce absolutely has a shot. And there's still a question that maybe the slop helped him in that last race, but he has been working out well since. So I would say don't play any multi-race exotics without including Finnick the Fierce, because he's fast enough to win and he's got that good post. One thing I will say about the post position information, Bill, I know you're looking at Bristnet, and it's 0% horses running at this distance at the current meet, 0% from the 8 post on out. However, if I look at the Daily Racing Form, the new formulator, you get post position by distance, and it shows you exactly how many races there were actually horses in the race. So there have only been 2 races. Mm-hmm. In fact, there's only been 1 race where there was a horse in the 8 hole and a race in the 9 hole. Otherwise, every other field has been 7 or less. And the 7 post has hit at 25%, or 2 out of 8. So I think we can neutralize that. Obviously, mm-hmm. outside post is generally a negative, and probably not as good as the 4 hole. But it's also not like a pox. It's not a proven pox, at least at this time. So I'm going to pick as my first pick. I will go with Enforceable, who is fast enough to win, and has a good race going 2 turns, 2 races ago, against Maxfield, who really kind of exploded that day. And not only did he explode, but I thought he was a bet against in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, and he ended up scratching. So I think he like just ran his brains out, and that's one reason why Enforceable finished 3rd. And then I think you can completely toss his last race, which was in the slop. So he's going to run as well, you know, at least as well as he did at Keeneland, I think. He's like 15-1 morning line. And with this 14-horse field getting into that first turn, I think there's going to be a lot of speed, especially with that Sycamore Lane or Sycamore Run all the way on the outside. It showed a lot of speed in its first race, which was a sprint. So he's going to gun it out of there. I think a lot of horses, when you get 14 horses, it's a stampede. I mean, everybody's going to want to get position, and I think it's going to ensure a fast pace. So I definitely want a closer. And that's why I'm down with Enforceable at 15-1. And my second choice is Silver State at 5-1, but I think he'll probably go off higher, because when you get 14 horses, I mean, it's kind of a guess. It's, you know, there's a bit of guessing game here. And then I'll just add as my third horse, just so I've, you know, confirmed that I really respect the pick, Chris, and that's Finnick the Fierce.
Hey, let me ask you guys something. Are you impacted at all by the odds that this horse, Finnick the Fierce, went off at in its last 2 races, particularly the last one at almost 90-1? The horse finished 2nd and ran a good number, and maybe that's what is most important to you. But that race was in the slop. Does it impact you at all in your handicapping, looking at the odds and saying, wow, this thing didn't get a look in the last race?
For me, it
doesn't.
Not.
For me,
Yeah, not for me either. In fact, I like it because it means that a lot of people won't play the horse just because it was 87-1 in its previous race.
Because of that.
But if it wins this race at 30-1, it's not going to be 30-1 in its next race. It's going to be 3-1. So.
Yeah, and I know why.
I learned my lesson. Go ahead.
I'll just say, I know it was a big price because of the connections. I mean, it went off at 2-1 in its debut at Indiana Downs. And then they gelded it and took it to Churchill, and it went off at 34-1 and got no respect and ran a pretty good race with some trouble. I mean, basically had some real trouble. And so then they ran it in a stakes race off that, which to me, you know, shows the confidence from the connections. And not surprising to me that it got ignored. It was 34-1 its prior race where it finished fourth. So to me, it's just, I understand why it was a big price. It's just getting underrated. And so, you know, I think it's, and it means to me that they're probably going to ignore it again in this race. So, you know, that's why I'm saying this could be one of those horses that's 30 or 40-1 again that has a chance to win. I mean,
and another thing about that horse, you know, now I'm beginning to like fantasize about betting this horse because in his one bad race, the one race where he didn't get in the money, it says he was taken out at the start and he still closed from last to fourth, only a length and a half out of it. So, and then he's second to Silver Prospector in the Kentucky Jockey Club. So, this horse is legit and this might be your last chance to get price on him.
Yes.
So I will mention one thing. There is a good,
what you guys thought.
Yeah, it kind of depends. If it looks like the horse should get bet and it doesn't, then I'm more concerned. But when I can understand why they're ignoring it, that doesn't bother me at all that they ignore it. In fact, I like that because I'm always looking for the kind of horses that they're likely to ignore, right? So to me, that's a positive.
I look at it as something to note, but certainly not definitive. And I learned my lesson a long time ago, the year that I was leading the NHC after day one. I would have won it on day one had I not looked at the odds at a horse called Letterman's Humor at 50-something to 1. I think it was shipping in from Hawthorne. And I didn't take it because of the price. It made me suspicious. It won, and it probably cost me winning the NHC. And I've never forgotten that.
Ooh. I seem to remember that when you did lead after day one, you still, there was another horse that was a completely like 70-1 that you did bet. So wasn't like your big hit, like a monster odds horse also?
I don't remember, but that could very well be. It was probably a combination of the odds with Letterman's Humor with something else, but thought about it enough that I think myself and my brother went and put, you know, $20 on it to win, and it was like the most sickening feeling on a winning bet I'd ever had. I've never forgotten that, and I never will. So I'm just curious.
I just want to mention
about the odds. I would say it's not definitive, but it's something I always note.
I just want to mention there's a good chance that it's going to be a sloppy track on Saturday at Fairgrounds. There's rain at Friday night and into Saturday. So some of these horses have shown that they can run on a sloppy track. Some are a little bit questionable, like Enforceable. I think I would downgrade a little bit on the sloppy track, but like some of these other horses we've mentioned, especially like Fennec the Fierce, you know, they can handle the sloppy track. So that's something to keep in mind as well.
Yeah. And he beat Tis the Law in his last race. So, and you're going to get 30-1 on a horse that beat Tis the Law, who's about as fast as every other horse in the race and has the one hole. I mean, if you look at the buyers, there are very few horses that have a higher buyer than his last race. So you know, hopefully not too many people listen to this pod, because if they do, this horse might be 5-1.
I seriously doubt that, but I mean, it'll be a fun race, and there's a lot of good horses in here. These are the kind of races that are fun to watch and play, because, you know, some of them are going to emerge as being, you know, the horses to follow on the Derby trail. And who knows, maybe one of these horses will eventually be the Derby winner. You never know.
All right. Well, I know that Chris has to leave soon, so I will tighten this up and we'll try to wrap it up. Before we close it out, though, I'd like to thank Bill Sherman for joining us. Bill, it was great. We hope to have you on again soon.
You're very welcome. I enjoyed it. It's fun.
All right. That will wrap up show number 48 of the PH Pod. Good luck in your betting. Cash well, cash often, and enjoy the Brooklyn Boogaloo Blowout.
Cheers.
Giddy up.